NFL Show, part of the Mojo Sports Network.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Mojo Sports Network. It is your host, Maggie O'Connell, and I'm so glad to be back for this week. It's great to be joined by Yuri, Alan, and Ash. Hey, guys.
Hey, Maggie. Great to be back on and looking forward to what's another pretty intriguing round.
Awesome. Now let's jump into round seven review. I'll start off with Richmond and Melbourne. Obviously, Anzac Day Eve, Melbourne got over the Tigers. The Demons did kick 10 of the last 12 goals in the game to run away with a 42-point win. I feel like Richmond did start off really well, but the D's are just too good. The D's first half wasn't their best, but they came good in the second half. Alan, did you want to touch on the Richmond-Melbourne game?
Yeah, this was not a pleasant game to watch, especially in that first half. With lots of poor skill errors from both sides. I think you could definitely tell that with Uze coaching, there was a lot of Melbourne intel that Richmond had, and that sort of led to a sort of a similar sort of game plan. And both had a similar sort of defensive structure. And they're both sort of kicking the same way and then just turning the ball over unforced in a way. So that was definitely, I think, probably the catalyst in the first half. That led Richmond to really be in the contest, and I suppose it was just a bit more inefficiency that they weren't able to probably be leading by more than a sort of couple of points at halftime. But once sort of that halftime break come, then Petrarca sort of get a bit more of the ball in the midfield, and then all of a sudden Daniel Turner pops up, kicks three goals, and then it's just the game's broken, and then Melbourne just take away, and as you said, kick 10 of the last 12 goals to really break the contest apart. And that should be probably what you expected going into it, be tied earlier than Melbourne with their class eventually overcoming it. But Richmond, they battled valiantly, but you could just tell that they got nothing up forward, and just Lever, May, McDonald just intercepting anything. And then in the end, they had 50, inside 50s for both teams, but they just got nothing, no presence up forward. And that was the clear difference between the sides. And Melbourne, once their class sort of took over, got the chocolates.
Yeah, once Petrarca gets going, he's hard to stop. So yeah, Tigers, I feel like they did start really well, but did drop off in the end. Now, moving on to Anzac Day. What a game this was. I did say to a few of my friends, now watch Essendon Collingwood. It's going to be one of the best games of the year. And it ends up in a draw. So as an Essendon fan, I'm actually not too happy with the draw. Obviously, Kyle Langford had that shot 20 to 25 metres out with a minute and a bit to go. So I said to a few of my friends, I reckon I would have kicked that with my eyes closed. But again, with the pressure on your shoulders, obviously, Langford just, yeah, hooked it to the right. So obviously, Zach Merritt with the medal as well, I feel like it was very well deserved. But from an Essendon fan point of view, I'm not too happy with that one. But I feel like our contested game was really well done, and we did stop guys like Nick Dacos and Josh in there as well. So, Yuri, what did you have to think about Anzac Day?
Yeah, just the Bombers' start, I think, Maggie, was extremely impressive, right? They got six goals in the opening quarter, and Collingwood, yes, they had their scoring opportunities but weren't able to convert, and they definitely wanted to sort of play a little bit more with speed on the ball in that opening half. But then, as we saw with Collingwood, they were able to just trim away at the margin and sort of able to wrestle the game back on their terms. And, of course, the likes of Joey Ndegoe and Scott Pendlebury too, and Tom Mitchell just able to sort of assert themselves back in the contest. And Bobby Hill, who was all right here and there too, but probably not to his great influence, because Andrew McGrath did an absolute stellar job on him. And considering McGrath also collected 31 disposals, that's just another really good effort too. And he's also just continuing on what is a magnificent season, playing off half back. Andy McGrath basically is a back pocket, if you want to call too. So I think when it came down to probably that third quarter, and looked as though Collingwood were just going to just bridge a gap between themselves and Essendon, and then the Bombers in that last quarter to kick those couple of goals early. And I think it was about 5 goals in the first 12 minutes, right, in the last quarter. And the game was basically just on a sort of a knife's edge, right, for the next essentially 15 minutes of the contest, where both teams couldn't score. You're sort of just pinning it a little bit back and forth between the team's 450 line. And then all of a sudden, as you absolutely nailed on the head, Maggie, Carl Langford had that opportunity to kick the goal, and it just went astray. And then Jamie Elliott, who, well, at this stage of the season, he's the contender for Mark of the Year, because that was unbelievable, that mark, right? No hands in the back, no hands on shoulders, just your traditional specky mark, and one that was perfectly captured too by Michael Wilson, who's a great AFL photographer and has been over many years. But then Elliott was all alone by himself and dropped what was a pretty sort of elementary mark, right? And that was one that went away too. And any hope that Collingwood well had to potentially hit the front right in the last minute of the game. But it was the first draw right since the very first Anzac Day game back in 1995. And it's all had everything you wanted in terms of the billing going into the game with Essendon's very solid start to the season. And Collingwood, after that shaky beginning, right, losing the first three games to GWS and Sydney as well before that big win against Brisbane, right, to really sort of kickstart their season. So it pretty much just lived up to the hype. And I'd say probably out of all the Anzac Day games that we've seen, right, 2009, of course, everyone knows as well, David Zaharakis' game-winning goal in the rain. But I think 2012 is probably the closest one I can think of that really had everything with it, the suspense that from start to finish. And there was no real, apart from, yes, Essendon's first quarter start, right, where they got out to the best part of a four-goal lead. It was just close right throughout, and you couldn't really tell who was going to win. So, no, it's just a great game to watch and one that I think the draws you said too, Maggie, I think you can just usher that to the side. I don't know why some people get all very hyped up about, oh, they should just abolish the draw. Well, if it's a draw, it's a draw anyway, so just get on with it.
I would love to see a bit of overtime. I'm a ice hockey fan and they do overtime. I would love to see it. So overtime would be cool, but obviously the game can't go on forever, but I would love to see overtime and that would be pretty epic. So also with Jamie Elliott, when he dropped that mark, I was getting flashbacks from, I don't know, it was last year or the year before, but obviously when he kicked that goal from the boundary. So I was just thinking, imagine if he took that. It just would have been another moment like that. But moving on to GWS and Brisbane, it feels like Brisbane didn't get off the bus or get off the plane for that matter. So obviously Anzac Day during the night time, I'm not sure how I like that. I do like just having Collingwood and Essendon playing on Anzac Day, but we had GWS and Brisbane as well. But Tom Green, he definitely got off the bus with 37 disposals and a goal. I love the way that he's going about it in the midfield. He's just flourishing there. With Cal Brown as well, with three goals, he was kicking bombs from 50. So that's awesome to see. But yeah, Brisbane just not showing up, which is disappointing. But I did love seeing Darcy Jones out there. He's an absolute weapon. And to see his speed, he's just fitting in so nicely. So, Ash, did you have to say anything about the Giants game?
Yeah, it was a really interesting one. And I can't remember exactly which journo was talking about it earlier on in the year, but we're pretty much saying, what if last year was it for Brisbane? What if that was their opportunity? Because nothing's ever guaranteed. You're not guaranteed to go back and compete and make another grand final the year after. What happens if last year was just it? That was their opportunity and now they've bottled it. And it sort of leaves you at a bit of a point because since 2019, the Lions have either made a prelim or made the top four it can't, you can't be like Geelong. It can't always go on forever. So what if that was just it? So it's a bit of an end of an era. They've got a few injuries. That's obviously not an excuse. So the season's now kind of teetering on the edge. They're 2-5. I think the one positive for Brisbane though was Kane Rayner, and he's probably arrived. It's taken a while. They've moved him across sort of every position on the ground possible, but he's really sort of a type of player. You can see kind of a bit of Dusty Martin in him. He can hurt you all around the ground. He can break tackles, good in the air, good on the ground. He can kick goals. He can rack up the touches. So he's a real spark for your forward and centre. So he's really great. But obviously, Giants deserve all the credit for the game. One stat which really stood out for me is I believe the Giants were 24-3 in tackles inside 50, which is just it's astounding. To smash someone that hard, and that obviously goes out to the smalls and the mids for Giants. Darcy Jones on debut was fantastic. So good on the Giants. They're definitely, probably a top three, top four team. Once again, probably chasing a premiership, a prelim, a grand final appearance. And yeah, it's really exciting to see where the season goes for them.
You always wonder, how good Brisbane actually are, and you look at their list and you write it all out on paper. It just kind of looks like a waste at the moment, with the talent that they have. You're just wondering what some Brisbane Lions fans are thinking, because it just seems like a waste of an era, wouldn't you say? So, yeah, but anyways, moving on to Port Adelaide and St Kilda Friday night, power by 10. I feel like Port Adelaide's pressure was phenomenal all day. The Saints keep battling and battling, but Port obviously got the chocolates in the end. Now, Connor Rosie, obviously he did his hamstring. He comes off, but he is playing this week, which I'm not too sure about. And I'm not quite sure what's going on there, but obviously he must be 100%. But yeah, obviously Connor Rosie comes back. And unfortunately, Power Pepper, Sam Culpepper goes out with an ACL, which is just so devastating to see. You don't like to see anyone, especially to their ACL, which is a 12-month rehab injury. But Alan, what do you have to say about Port Adelaide and St Kilda?
Yeah, this was, I mean, it was like 10 points in the end, but it didn't feel like a 10-point game, this one. It was really just Port Adelaide's inefficiency in front of goal that sort of kept St Kilda in it. So Butters Drew had really strong games in sort of the midfield, but I always like to say, boy, Jace Burgoyne probably his best game of his career, really sort of breakout. He was really, I thought he was one of the best players on the ground. His sort of ball movement was really, really impressive to watch. And it was Houston off the halfback line was great too. St Kilda, like, there's two, like, sort of credit, they are just hanging in there. I mean, it's sort of been their story all season so far. They're in each contest, but their just inability just to win the games is there. That partly too, maybe because all the sort of the, you know, having King out for a couple of times through suspension, things like that, not having a focal point up forward, that's just their structures sort of being a bit broken. I mean, of course, going away to Port Adelaide is always going to be a tough ask, and India probably didn't expect them to win, but they still have a good structure there that keeps them in the games, but their class is just not up to the level of Port Adelaide's. I mean, in the end, it was just a pretty good, strong win by Port Adelaide, and season just keeps rolling ahead for them, and they keep rolling the wins in.
Now, moving on to Saturday afternoon, North Melbourne and Adelaide. Wow, I mean, Crows by 57. I always say to myself, will North even win a game this year? I'm not quite sure. But Adelaide were just too good in the end, obviously, with Laird with 34 disposals and a goal. So he was fantastic all day. So, Yuri, what do you have to say about this? Will North Melbourne win a game for the year?
Oh, that's a tricky one too, Megan. Hopefully for their sake they do, because this whole sort of they've been in rebuilding mode for, you can almost say, the best part of 4 seasons, right, since the end of that 2020 shortened COVID year. But sort of have to point out exactly from last season, right, with Ben Mackay leaving, and he only won what, 8 games pretty much during his time at the Kangaroos, and then that sort of opens the door potentially for other players who become a little bit disgruntled about their time with the club, whether they leave for more success in another club who's in the premiership window or who is just about to enter. So there's one too, which has sort of been circulating with Luke Davies-Uniacke at the end of next season. However, he's a restricted free agent, so North Melbourne can match any bid on any other club and keep him if they want. So that's sort of one that's going to be really interesting to see how that pans out within these probably next 18 months. But just with the game against Adelaide, right, I think the Crows were able to get back to that serious high octane style of footy, which has sort of eluded them, right? And we've harped on this constantly on the show for the first couple of months about the structure going inside 50, their connectivity between their midfielders and forwards, which has really sort of been a major talking point for them. And I think after that Fremantle game, which Matthew Nicks was, he was pretty disconsolate, should I say. He just was almost left sort of awry for answers on how we fix it up. And there were signs against Melbourne the following week that they were able to address it here and there too, and especially against Carlton, even though they lost the inside 50 count by about minus 13, they still were able to correct those areas and really cash in on those opportunities, right, when they kicked 16 goals and came back from the clouds 16 points down with 7 minutes remaining. But right from the outset, though, they just completely just bullied them. And that was the thing, though. So you mentioned too, Maggie, Rory Laird's game, Tex Walker forward, the back line was solid, and Jake Soligo, who's been one of Adelaide's best players this season, just keeps performing week in, week out. And that's the style that everyone from last season knows about Adelaide, when they sort of at least probably brought the competition on notice a bit, that they're all sort of an up-and-coming side, that their ball movement would absolutely annihilate teams, and particularly on the Adelaide Oval, where they just make a track meter there. But just to see what happened on Saturday, for them to keep, what, 20 goals, 18 all up, and yes, North Melbourne salvaged some respectability, kicking 5 last-quarter goals, but it just wasn't enough, right? And I think Alistair Clarkson said too post-game that still trying to search for something, it's just trying to stick in games for long periods of time. And we've seen, right, with what West Coast have done, even though they lost to Gold Coast last week, but the past fortnight has almost been as though, did we think West Coast were going to win a game this season? Or even Hawthorn, yes, but Hawthorn is sort of just really struggling for the time being too, and they're basically in the same sort of charter position as North Melbourne are. But no, full kudos to the Crows though, and we'll see whether that sort of just galvanizes further for the showdown tomorrow night.
Yeah, cannot wait for the showdown. It'll be awesome. So, moving on to Geelong and Carlton. Obviously, Carlton just fell short, Cats by 13. But Carlton was strong all day around the contest. The first 4 AFL Fantasy points go to Carlton. So, obviously, Patrick Cripps with 2 goals and 29 disposals. I love Harry Mackay down there as well. Akers kicking 2. and Wietering down there is just really strong. So, but I mean, Geelong did get the chocolates, and obviously Grind Myers was a standout with 22 disposals and 2 goals. But I will pass it on to Ash because you do go for Carlton. So, what do you have to say about this game?
Yeah, an unashamedly biased Carlton supporter. I reckon you have this game on any other round of the year, and it's probably the game of the week. But unlucky with the Anzac Day panning out the way that it was. You know, it's a great for the game when you see a game high scoring, it's close, both teams kicking over 100 points. It's just great to see. Unfortunately for Carlton, it seems like all their sort of as soon as they started the game, they're on the back foot early, you know, kicking 2 goals, 8 in and out on the full or something at some stage. And it's surprising when I had a look later. Carlton were plus 21 in inside 50s. It was just the efficiency going in. You know, it seemed like every time Carlton went inside 50, bombing it to a 2v1 against, which is it's just crazy. And as a supporter, it just makes you want to pull your hair out. Whereas on the other hand, Geelong were over 60% efficiency going inside 50, which is crazy. And I think with that, a lot of credit needs to go to you guys like Grind Myers, Max Holmes, Tyson Segal. I thought was really good, despite only kicking 1 goal. I thought sort of his presence in the forward half was really, really strong. Jeremy Cameron kicking his 600th goal and doing what he does best. So I think it's disappointing for Carlton. Obviously, they had their classic final quarter charge. It wasn't enough at the end. I think De Koning, Durden, and Curnow all kicked behinds in the final quarter when they sort of needed them. But that was a story at the end of the game. The inefficiency cost Carlton the game. But I don't think as a Blues supporter, it can be too disappointed. You know, Geelong are still undefeated. They're one of the best teams in the comp. And we gave it to them. Not good enough. But we'll see you in September, Geelong. We're coming for you.
Well, you did kick 15. Oh, Carlton did kick 15 goals and 15 behinds. Can you believe? So, yes, I think they need to do some goal kicking at training. That's for sure. So, now moving on to Fremantle and the Western Bulldogs. The Dockers are back. Nat Fyfe is definitely back. I love watching Nat Fyfe play ever since, you know, he started absolutely dominating the game back in 2015. But Nat Fyfe is back for sure with his best at 37 disposals and a goal. So, also Caleb Sarong as well with 37. So yeah, Nat Fyfe could not be stopped. And it was like I was watching 2015 Nat Fyfe again, which is awesome to see. But also shout out to Patrick Voss, who made his debut as well and kicked a goal. And his celebration was enormous. And obviously he played for Essendon VFL and just couldn't get a game. So to see him flourish in the West and obviously kick a goal is awesome. So Yuri, what did you have to say about Fremantle and the Western Bulldogs?
It was the response, right, from the Dockers after what happened in Derby 58 the previous week, Maggie. That was really a big comprehensive tick, I think, for them. And especially as you point out too, with Fyfe, Sarong and Brayshaw, and those three, the trio completely ran amok in that first quarter. Fyfe had, what, 15 disposals, and Sarong also had roughly around 13 disposals, and Brayshaw had about the same number too. And it was just the whole, I think what we saw, or what we've seen with Fyfe this season, is his handball linking in chains. I think that's been the big driving setup out the middle from Fremantle's clearance game. When he gets his hands on the ball and feeds out to either Sarong or Brayshaw and are able to sort of just break away that ever so slightly, then it really sort of gives Fremantle that first use and to advantage too. So that was really telling. And I think also too, Alex Pearce's game was exceptional once again, and he's already had an exceptional season as it is. And same with Luke Ryan, and also Cooper Simpson on debut showed plenty of flashes, and he's going to be a real big sort of key part of Fremantle for many years to come too, because what we saw on last Saturday night with him was, I think, just that little more extra injection of speed. Like, they're not lacking for speed, Fremantle, but he's just sort of adds more to it. And sort of, I think when opposition teams do go to sort of the scouting review or doing their sort of film analysis, that if he's in the team on a regular basis in the 22, because Nathan O'Driscoll currently isn't playing at this stage, he also just provides just that extra layer of a dimension within sort of whether it's a half forward or on the wing or sort of on ball too. So I think it was close right throughout though. And that's probably the beauty of it until the last 3 minutes of the game, right, where the Bulldogs were pressing hard. They had the ball deep inside their forward 50 for a throw-in. And ultimately there was just that big play, Bailey Banfield, who for many years, right, since he's been at the Dockers, he's always been the sub. And he sort of is puzzling in a way why he's continuously being a sub, and he's almost just like this X factor in a way too. And thank goodness, right there, he's actually not been the one that's constantly been given that green vest to come into the game, shall I say, for whether it is the start of last quarter or late in the third quarter. But he came up big, right, with that goal to essentially just give Fremantle enough of the buffer, a 2-goal lead at that point, and they were just able to sort of career away in those final minutes of the game. But it was just, there was a lot more sort of purpose, I think, with Fremantle's ball movement too, compared to what happened in the Derby, right, where they were just really stagnant and they just couldn't get too much going. But that was to the Eagles' credit in that particular aspect. But I think there's definitely a lot of positive signs though too, and the clearance game as well. The Bulldogs, they completely annihilated the Dogs in that area. So that was probably the biggest bonus because it was West Coast who were doing it to them the previous week. Just one more to touch on too. Bontempelli was pretty quiet in a way. Yes, he had his 24 disposals, but probably not the telling influence that we normally associate with the Bonds. And although Adam Treloar was pretty good too, and Cody Waitman's injury, that elbow, which he re-aggravated again for like the second time in the month, he hurt it against West Coast in round three, and the same one which he's wearing the shooting sleeve on his right elbow. So that's sort of a really, it's sort of really bad luck in a way too. So how they sort of find more goals at ground level. Yes, Riley West has been good, but then to try and find that other small forward, I think, depending on how long Waitman is out for, unless somehow miraculously Waitman gets up for Sunday's game against Hawthorn. But yeah, that's the thing though. Fremantle, I think, just completely sort of just outmatched the Dogs of their own game.
Yeah, for sure. You nailed it there, Yuri. But moving on to the Gold Coast Suns and West Coast. Now, I was at that game and West Coast did dominate early. It was just weird seeing them dominate early and the Suns fans weren't too happy. So the Suns did hit back though. They did win by 37 points. And obviously I just love watching the Suns midfield go about it. Obviously Noah Anderson in there, Rowley. He's just a tackling machine and took Miller as well. So to see those guys flourish, especially towards the second half, was phenomenal. But yeah, as I said before, Anderson bullish in the middle, 33 disposals and 2 goals. So that's really impressive. So yeah, Gold Coast obviously got the chocolates there, and West Coast got Essendon this week. So I'm actually pretty nervous for that. So I do believe West Coast are getting better each and every week. So moving on to Hawthorn and Sydney. Hawthorn, I just don't think they got off the bus again. One of those teams that are just trying to find their feet. But obviously, it's lovely to see Buddy Franklin back. Doing the lap of honour, seeing him smiling is awesome. And yeah, the Swans won by 76 points. So obviously, Nick Blakey with 30 disposals, Heaney with 3 goals. He's just dominating each and every week and getting better. And obviously, to top it off with the 21 disposals. So Ash, did you want to add anything with the Hawthorn Sydney Swans game?
Yeah, I mean, any team kicking 5 goals in the game is just terrible. And I think that wasn't really helped by the fact that Mabio Choa was held really tight by Tom McCartan. Jack Ginnivan kicked 0 goals 4. Jack Gunston, 0 goals 2. So it's just not what you want from the players, which you're relying to kick goals week on week out. For me, I think this game from Sydney reminded me a lot of West Coast and sort of their prime in the late 2010s. With their ability to really control the play, go slow when they needed to go slow, go fast when they needed to go fast. And on the wide MCG, using their runners, they really just dominated and outran the Hawks the entire day. And obviously, that's helped when you got, some of the players on their team are incredible. Blake, he probably played his best game for the year. Jake Lloyd played his best game for the year. Ollie Florent probably too. And then Goulden and Heaney doing what they do best. So it's the biggest win margin of the year so far, equal biggest. But also they were playing the Hawks. So there's not a lot you can really take out of it if you're the Swans, but keep it going. They've got a big game this week. And yeah, it'll be very interesting to see.
Now, moving on to topic of the week, we obviously have Jack Higgins from St Kilda in the tribunal with the 3-match ban. Now, just to put something on there, putting yourself in that position personally is very, very hard. Obviously, Jack Higgins is pretty small, and Alir is obviously a key defender. So, Alir trying to kick the ball obviously while in the air, I believe, makes it look worse than it actually is. I don't know if I like the 3-match ban, but they're obviously trying to stamp it out of the game. So I'll pass it off to you, Alan. What do you have to say about the tribunal?
Yeah, this is probably one of the more hotly debated ones, I think, so far this season, in terms of what's going to be probably appropriate in terms of the ban. Because I think suspension is probably still warranted here. But obviously, what St Kilda got given was 3 weeks when they went to the tribunal to try and challenge that. And they did argue that, as you said, Maggie, that at least kicking action definitely contributed towards that the small slink action that actually did occur from Higgins. And now they did use a sort of biomechanist, Dr. Bain, to come in and actually argue this point. And I sort of actually agree with his assumption of it as well, being a fellow biomechanist. So he mentioned that the raising the leg, aggressively swinging it upwards, so shifted his mass and also towards his sort of upper body. So instead of being sort of central range of the hips sort of area, it's gone towards more towards his head. And that's definitely contributed towards the dropping action on Toby's head, but also the aggressive swinging action too of the leg definitely increased that angular momentum. Now Higgins has no chance of stopping that whatsoever, especially when he's trying to bring him to the ground. So it definitely exasperates the action to it. Now Higgins did say that he was expecting him to go full front on, and I probably think he's probably going to be a bit still a bit side on in terms of dropping, but his head wouldn't be, I think, the first thing to hit, make contact to the ground. So I think the 3 week ban, even though it was upheld, I think is probably incorrect. For me, I think it's still 2 weeks. It's 2 weeks under mitigating circumstances. I still think it's definitely suspendable because he still had that arm pinged, which is definitely a key indicator which you don't want to have in the AFL. But the action that Alia definitely contributed, I think, a lot to this being a worse outcome than it probably should have been. But then what's the case with Higgins? What's he meant to do? Like, I mean, there's reports of people saying that the tribunal saying that AFL saying that he should let go of him. Like, you can't do that. He's 30 metres out directly in front of goal. He gets a free kick holding the ball. He's going to have a set shot. There's only 10 points in the game in the end. You know, anything like that could then have a big implication on the game results. So I think the AFL in a way is asking too much, and they need to probably should come out and start to clarify a few things, especially around these sling tackles of what is actually expected of players. Because at the moment, I think an incident like this definitely leaves that up to debate still.
Yeah, 100%. As I said before, if you put yourself in Jack Higgins' shoes, you seriously can't do much. You know, a tackle's a tackle, and you're obviously trying to get them to ground. But I think just the pin of the arm and the action of him, Alia, trying to kick it as well doesn't help. So, anyways, moving on to the previews now. We are going to be running through all the upcoming games, giving you the key takes on each game, and I'll also be doing game shapers for each game, and I'll also be doing my tips for each round. So we're going to start off with Thursday night footy, which is tomorrow night, Adelaide v Port Adelaide, obviously a blockbuster at Adelaide Oval. Obviously, I said before, Rosie is back playing, which I don't know if that's suitable, and I just don't think that's right. Obviously, he came off with a hamstring injury, so. But again, he must be fit to play. But I believe with my game shaper, the person that has to step up definitely is Charlie Dixon. I believe he's going to have a really big game. So I'm going to be tipping Port by 7. Now, Yuri, did you want to touch on Adelaide, Port Adelaide?
Yeah, I think there's probably one area too, Maggie, that I think is already it gets talking here gets talked about every now and then too, but Willem Drew and his tagging role, and apart from just being a tagger too, he can win his own ball, which we saw against Brisbane about 3 years ago, which he was by far one of the best players on that night too, which he had 33 disposals. So he's capable of getting 25, 30 touches anyway, but also having that same impact of completely negating either the best or the second best midfielder of the opposition team. So I think there's probably a pretty good chance that he goes on to Rory Laird. I think I could well be mistaken in that, but because Laird isn't blessed with quick leg speed, that's the thing though. A lot of his possessions come within the coal face, and a lot of it is contested, and he doesn't hurt you by foot. I feel as though Willem can almost play a free rein at the same time as well as trying to shut him down, and that's where I feel as though that's probably one of the big parts with Port Adelaide with their midfield and the whole sort of spread on the outside. We've seen countless times this season from clearances, whether it's from Horne Francis to Rosie to Butters or vice versa or another vice versa. That's the most dangerous part too with Port's clearance game. And that's where I think it's going to be the big difference with them sort of springing to the outside and really catching the slow sort of fleet-footed Adelaide's midfielders on the hop. Because again, that's where Adelaide's sort of midfield nucleus aren't blessed with sort of that burst of acceleration, 1 or 2 steps out of clearances. But also too with the forward line for Port Adelaide, and also you mentioned too Todd Marshall and Charlie Dixon up for Marshall's had a relatively sort of subdued start to the season, unlike his 2022 form, which he kicked 45 goals. And I feel as though they can get Adelaide's backline. Adelaide don't have the tallest backline in the comp. That is sort of a worry. I think for height, they can stretch them a fair bit. And they've gone with what the two-prong ruck combination from last week as well, with Jordan Sweat, who made his power debut, and Ivan Soto, who's had a magnificent start to his Port Adelaide career after those handful of seasons at Richmond. So that's where I feel as they had that option there playing Soldo with sort of a three-prong tall forward attack, or they can play Jordan Sweet up there if they want to. So they have an abundance of options, Port Adelaide, that can really hurt them. And also, I think this is one thing just want to touch on before we do sort of move on. But Port Adelaide's defense, when you have now a little bit more height, which is helps Alia out so much too, with Brandon Zerk-Thatcher and Asava Radicalea. And that's where I think it just helps tremendously with that intercept marking. There's not that sole reliance on Alia to go, well, you have to play not the best key forward every single week. And that's where if we lose, then, oh, we'll just blame on you. But no, they don't have to anymore, though. And that's where I feel as though Port Adelaide have just got, I think, too many aces in a way. And I think they should be too strong by about 15 points for mine.
Now, moving on to Carlton and Collingwood. I mean, what a game we got here, guys. 7:40 Friday night, MCG. Obviously, two big Victorian clubs, rivals. It goes all the way back till, we weren't even born. So, Carlton, Collingwood, obviously, Collingwood are going to be without Mitchell and Dugowie. So, they are out with the hot clash. And obviously, Carlton, I believe, will win by 10 points. So yeah, Ash, you'll be happy about that. But I do believe it is my game shaper is Sam Walsh. So he obviously had a terrific game last week, but I think he's going to have another breakout and have 30 plus. So also, I believe it's going to be Kerno's big night out as well. So I reckon Carlton will get the chocolates, but Ash, you'll love to talk about your Blues boys.
Yeah, and look, you already know what I'm going to say. Collingwood stand no chance here, right? They can make all the excuses they want with no Mitchell, no Dugowie. What about Carlton having four of their best six defenders out? Chera hasn't been playing. He comes back in. Him, along with Walsh and Cripps, are going to dominate that midfield. They're going to get forward. Charlie and Harry are going to kick 10 between them. Collingwood won't stand a chance, all right? So, look, Collingwood fans, start getting your excuses ready, okay? Start getting it ready. Start getting your Twitter replies and Instagram comments all prepared. Because come Friday evening, 10:30, once the game is finished, Carlton beat you by 10 goals. I want to see all the salt in the comments. There we go. Carlton by 10 goals. You heard it here first.
Oh, I don't mind that. I don't mind that. I mean, I have tipped Carlton, but I haven't tipped them by 10 goals. But maybe I should take your advice. But I would love to see the Blues get out, especially over Collingwood with that draw on Anzac Day. So looking forward to that one. But moving on to Sydney and GWS 1:45 on the Saturday at the SCG. This is going to be another hot clash. I can't wait to see Darcy Jones, play against a pretty good opposition in Sydney and see how he goes with his flash and his run. So my game shaper for this game is Ollie Florent, obviously playing his 150th game. So looking forward to that one, but I tip the Swans by 15. So I'm looking forward to that one. But Alan, do you have to add anything with the Sydney GWS game?
Yeah, I don't think Swans are going to win this one. It's going to be absolutely peeing down rain, which will make it absolutely contested, wet, slippery, ball forward, inside 50, stack of territory game, and that's going to suit the Giants absolutely. I mean, it comes from the Richmond playbook, and Richmond was unbeatable in the wet in their prime. And right now, I see Giants being at the same sort of level. Their ball movement and they're just inside 50. In they're just ball movement from defence, from midfield. It tore Brisbane apart. And we saw the sort of best of it last week. And we're going to get sort of Toby Green back as well for the Giants as well. So I'm thinking that's going to be sort of too much for them. Obviously, SCG will be a bit much. It would be obviously good for the Swans, but the last few years, though, the Giants have been able to beat. They sort of had the wood over Sydney for the last couple of seasons. But it's also not so much the game, which will be fantastic because they're two top four teams, which expect to be right there at the end of the season as well. But it's the game off the field as well that I'm looking forward to with the Giants media team, which are fantastic. And they're already putting barbs out, which is good to see. So that's what I'm sort of most looking forward to about this game as much as anything.
Yeah, I'm very looking forward to the GWS media. Cooper Hamilton, he absolutely loves it. So I love all his videos and things like that on the social media with the Giants. But moving on to St Kilda and North Melbourne at 4:35 on the Saturday at Marvel Under the Roof. I'm not too sure about this game. Hopefully North Melbourne do get off the bus, but the Saints will just be too good, I believe. I do have the Saints by 37 points, but I do believe though North Melbourne will show a bit of fight in the first half, but they will drop drop off in the second half. So my game changer is Callum Wilkie down back. So he's going to have an absolute blinder of a game, and I'm looking forward to that one. So moving on to Melbourne and Geelong at 7:30 Saturday on the MCG. A huge game with both teams in great form. So I'm looking forward to this one. It's a battle of the midfield, but the question is that can Melbourne stop Jeremy Cameron? So Jezza is just on fire, obviously kicking 5 last week. So the Cats, I believe, will win by 8 points. So it'll be an absolute thriller. And I'm looking forward to seeing how that game pans out. But my game changer, as I said, is Jeremy Cameron. And I hope he does really well. So, Yuri, do you have to touch on anything with that clash?
Well, we know, of course, with Melbourne Geelong games in the last handful of seasons, probably since, 2018, right? They've all been exceptionally close. And there's just a thing, though. I don't know how to sort of pinpoint it in a way, too, when we talk about from the opening round of 2018, where Max Gawn missed the absolute sitter that will put Melbourne in front inside the last minute. And, of course, 2018, the same, year as well, which Zach Tui kicked the match-winning goal after the siren, ice in his veins, if you want to call it. And in 2021, that final round, which Max Gawn kicked the winning goal after the siren in front of an empty GMHBA stadium to give Melbourne the minor premiership. And remember that game too, they were trailing by 44 points early in the third quarter. So that was just no ordinary comeback. That was one miracle comeback, considering it's at Cadinia Park. And since 2007, teams, unless you name GWS, have had some degree of success playing there. But just, I don't know why I didn't tip Geelong last week and I didn't tip them this week. And I may be completely foolish by the end of the night, but feels like just a whole grunt. And we sort of talk about with Melbourne's contested game and clearance game, and when that's on, they're just awfully hard to stop. But at the same time, too, if somehow Tom Hawkins is curtailed once more, which Jacob Wiedering did a magnificent job of last week, Hawkins only registered one behind in all. And I think with May and Lever, too, whoever May gets, most likely Tom Hawkins, and I think Tom McDonald will probably get Jeremy Cameron, and that just leaves, of course, Lever to just patrol around and intercept Mark, whether Geelong get their entries right, which, this season they've got most of their entries right anyway, going inside 50, especially when you have the ball in Ryan Myers' hands 55, 60 metres out. But feels like then goes down to the opposite end too, because we talk about Melbourne's sort of foray entries and how that can either be a real sort of positive in a way when they're up and about, but then it can almost be their detriment when they're not executing and they're not hitting up those simple targets and they're bombing straight to a pack. And that's where Geelong just thrives, in those situations where essentially Sam DeConing can just go up and intercept Mark, or Tom Stewart, who should return this week anyway from his mandatory 12-day concussion protocol, that those two will just chop off every single aerial kick that goes in their direction. So it's sort of almost a counteracting, isn't it? Of sort of the vice versa of both teams. They love to intercept a lot too, but also Geelong with this whole sort of rebranding the way too, this reinvigoration, the youth in their midfield, and of course that we've seen with Tanner Bruin, who's been exceptional this season, and Zach Guthrie's continued on his great form from last season, and basically Brandon Parfitt's form too, because he was almost just an in and out and a sort of an inconsistent member of the team, despite him sort of really showing true glimpses of his potential. Now he's sort of really cashing in amongst that too. But also Patrick Dangerfield's absence for the next 6 weeks. How much does that sort of have an effect? Well, it's sort of an unknown, right? Because they've sort of been able to excel without him too, even when he missed those couple of weeks with a hamstring injury only a month ago too. So I just feel as though Melbourne may just get a little bit of a squeeze. I feel as though that ruck ascendancy with Gawn too up against Reece Stanley, even though Stanley was able to sort of even it out a bit with Pitney, because Pitney completely dominated that first half, but Max Gawn's just to another level anyway with his ruck work and going up 4-2, I feel as though he can probably stretch Stanley in that regard. So I feel as though Melbourne for mine for probably about a couple of goals.
Yeah, it should be an absolute cracker. I'm very looking forward to that one. So moving on to Saturday night, 8:10. It's a bit of a late game, but West Coast Eagles and obviously Essendon. So I'm actually pretty nervous for this game, can I be honest with you, as an Essendon fan? Obviously, after Anzac Day with the draw, I do believe we did play in patches really, really well. And obviously, Collingwood, a really good side. So I'm really looking forward, obviously, to see how Essendon bounce back from their draw. But just to keep an eye out for, I think Harley Reid is back in. So to see Harley Reid and Elliot Yeo with the home crowd, they're going to fire up, obviously. But I do believe the Essendon midfield is going to be too good. Zach Merritt and seeing Sam Durham in there as well. Just put Sam Durham on Harley Reid and Harley Reid won't get a touch. So I do love the way that Sam Durham goes about it. He's just an absolute ball. And I do believe if we have to put one player as someone to, see out the Essendon edge, if you want to call it, just Sam Durham is the Essendon edge. Just the way he goes about it, it's just unbelievable. And I do love the way that he just hunts the ball. And yeah, he's just having an absolute excellent season. So I'm looking forward to the midfield battle there. But my game changer is Andrew McGrath. Obviously, he's back in form, but I love the way that he's just bouncing off half back, driving his legs, and just hitting targets as well. So yeah, he did really well on Anzac Day. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do against West Coast. But I do have Essendon by 30 points. So hopefully that is true. Or even more, because we need to boost up our percentage. So, anyways, moving on to Richmond and Fremantle. Alan, obviously, your boys, I don't know if they'll get the job done, but 1 o'clock on the Sunday at the MCG, it's Nat Fyfe against Dusty Martin. So that's going to be great to see. Definitely watch that space. But will the Tigers obviously bounce back from their loss against the Demons? Now, obviously, I have Fremantle by 21 points. Sorry, Alan, but I'm looking forward to this clash. What do you have to say about it, Alan?
I think it's going to be tough for Richmond still. They lost Hopper last week as well, just when he comes back. In that first half, he was very good, and you could just see how much of importance he is to that midfield. So he goes out again, which is just puts us back to our extremely young and inexperienced midfield. I think we do get Shane Short back, which would be some bit of help, but I think Fremantle, in terms of their defense and so forth, we've got nothing up forward to kick to, and then you've got Alex Pearce having to deal with, like. It's going to be the same thing as Melbourne the previous week. We're going to have our fair share inside 50, so a fair share of time with the ball, but we're just not going to be able to score. So it's going to be a very low scoring game, I think. I think our defence will still hold up pretty well against Freo's forward line. So we'll be sort of a low scoring dour game, I have a feeling. But if there's one game that could be an upset, this might be it. Especially if someone like a Shea Bolton could definitely pop off and his best game for the season, then anything could happen. But you would expect that the Sherong, Fyfe, Brayshaw midfield would just be far too dominant against a very young and experienced Richmond lineup.
Yeah, nailed it, Alan, that's for sure. But moving on to the Western Bulldogs and Hawthorn Sunday, arvo, I do believe Western Bulldogs will be way too good. I mean, Hawthorn have shown their glimpses during the past weeks, but the Dogs will bounce back as the team that they are, and guys like obviously Bontempelli and their whole midfield will just bounce back, and the clearance difference will be massive, I believe. So I'm looking forward to that game. I do have the Dogs by 26 though, and my game changer, I have to go with someone, especially down forward in the ruck as well, as Sam Darcy. So I'm looking forward to seeing if he can clunk a few and kick some snags as well. So looking forward for that one on the Sunday, arvo. Now Sunday night, a bit of a weird time, but 7:10 at the Gabba, up in Queensland here. But we have the Q Clash, Brisbane Lions and the Gold Coast Suns. So it's the battle of the midfield. It's typically Rau v Dunkley, really. To see those guys go out is going to be awesome. So I do believe it's a big night for Mac Andrew to see if he can hold up guys like Kipwood. I have seen a lot of social media comments saying you need to drop Kipwood, but not sure how they'll go about that. But seeing Kipwood and Danaher, see if Mac Andrew can obviously hold up either both of them or just one of them. So I'm looking forward to that matchup there. But I do have the Lions by 15. So I do believe Brisbane will be too good. The Suns will start off well and then die down a little bit. So, Alan, do you have to say anything about that game?
This will be. I mean, this is if any game that Brisbane need to win is going to be the Q Clash to get their season just rolling again. Because at the moment they've just been spluttering, and their forward line connection has gone from being what the best team the last 2 to 4 years by far to pretty much being the pretty much the worst at the moment. They're sort of right down the bottom with their efficiency going forward. They're rivaling sort of North Melbourne, Richmond ability at the time being, which is quite remarkable seeing the amount of talent that they have. I mean, this is Charlie Cameron's worst season by a long way since way back in his early days at Adelaide. So there's definitely something they need to really sort of work on. And Fagan's been quite almost depressed in trying to work out what the issue is, and you can't quite get your finger on it. But for the Gold Coast, it's a game that probably I would expect them to actually to win if they are going to truly challenge for finals this year. So far, they've only been winning at home. And Gold Coast, so Now, it's still only just down the road going to Brisbane, but still, it's a game away from their home ground. So for them, this is probably the most vital one that they just should win. But it's going to be a close game. It's going to be heated. Definitely a lot of talk up in the media about the two teams, the Tuke Miller versus Zorko rivalry, etc. But I think it's going to be close. I've got the Saints. I've got the Suns by a goal, but it wouldn't surprise me though if Brisbane come away with a good strong win though.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind the Suns getting up. So that'll be good to see, especially at the Gabba. But guys, that is a wrap for the previews. I'm very looking forward to this round of footy. But I just want to thank you guys for joining me. Thanks, Alan, Yuri, and Ash. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Thank you,
Thanks,
Maggie.
Maggie.
Thanks, Mag.
No, thank you. But make sure, guys, to subscribe to Mojo Sports Network, wherever you get your podcasts, and to follow on the social media platforms as well. So at Mojo Sports Network and our AFL Instagram at Mojo Sports AFL. So have a great weekend, guys, and enjoy the footy. So thank you, and we'll see you next time.